Work takes up most of your time. That's why you should use Stamps.com to save time with your mailing and shipping, and have flexibility to focus on more important things. Stamps.com can handle all your mailing and shipping needs with rates up to 88% off USPS and UPS. Add flexibility to your day with Stamps.com. Go to stamps.com/program to sign up for a special offer. No contract, cancel anytime. That's stamps.com/program.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
This podcast is brought to you in part by Dragon Shield. Use code PLAY to win 5 at the affiliate link down below for 5% off to help support the show.
Welcome to the Play to Win podcast, where we talk about winning in CEDH. I'm Cam.
I'm Dylan, and this week we are talking about CEDH, as always. We're talking about the best decks in CEDH. As always, we're talking about the best decks in CEDH that we think will remain the best decks in 2025 due to some data.
And the best decks that are kind of right now.
Right now.
I kind of mentioned a little bit really quickly last week that I feel like I'm a little bit behind on where the CEDH tournament stuff is.
Okay.
The bans happened. I feel like it's been many months now since the bans.
It's been almost four. I think it's been like three and some change.
That's a lifetime in the term of a Magic the Gathering
feels
format
crazy.
Cycle.
You could have told me that was 2 weeks ago, and I would say that feels about right. 4 months feels nuts.
But I feel like we've had plenty of time for a meta to kind of settle.
Yes.
And I feel like it's been way past that time, really. But I want to spend this podcast trying to figure out what the best decks in CEDH are right now in 2025.
I love it. You've done a little bit of research. You've caught yourself up a tiny bit with some data on some tournaments that have happened.
Yeah, I found a couple of cool things. I got a new website that I think I might want to start making a staple of stuff that I look at here. mtgdecks.net.
Okay.
It says that they collect data from MTGO, MTG Top 8, EtherHub, and many more sites to give us a good view of the
EDH
metagame.
Can you show me what
metagame.
This looks like?
Yeah, have you seen this deck before? This website
no.
before?
What am I thinking of? I'm thinking of another resource that shows like Modern List and something.
It'll show you like all like the Commander tournaments here, so we can like look at deck lists in the tournaments and how they do. And the Commander Meta tab is one that I found that made me really like this website.
And these are all CEDH tournaments.
I think some of them might be like high power tournaments that sneak in here because MTG Top 8 has some stuff that like sneaks in. I know Spice Rack has some stuff that like sneaks in based on locals, and sometimes locals has like some funny stuff, but that's how you find Spice, which
you're,
I really like.
You're allowed to bring a high power deck to a CEDH tournament. Maybe it'll do well.
Yeah, exactly. But I still think we're going to get a really good snapshot of the best decks this way because that off meta stuff isn't going to appear in like the high percentages.
Right. It's not
going
to be what we're looking at anyway.
Now, the only thing that I don't love is that it separates all the partners out separately, so it doesn't show you Timna Thrasios separate from, like, Timna Krom.
Oh.
Timna and Krom and Thrasios are all separate, but when we click on Thrasios, we can go in and we can actually see how many decks were piloted by a Timna Thrasios deck.
So you do get to see the
Thrasios
distinction.
Or a Thrasios Rograk, right?
Yeah.
We just have to do a little bit more work ourselves.
That's okay. The information's still there.
So what I really like to see on here is that I can look at it in the past week. That's what I also really liked about this.
Yeah.
I can just look at 1 week. And looking at the past week, the Timna usage in CEDH is soaring right
really?
Now.
Really? Yeah. I mean, I feel like I've seen that a lot as well. Our metagame, I feel like, has a lot of Timna also. Timna's
you
just...
and me are feeding into that quite a bit.
Yeah, I guess that's us.
Well, that's because we're both playing Timna decks, and I know that there's also a lot of different ways you can go with Timna right now. I've been saying that I think Timna Thrasios has been one of the best decks
definitely.
In the new format, and I hope that stands true still after we get to the end of this.
Yeah, definitely. And I think Timna Krom still has just remained the best deck in the format, if not one of the best decks. Like, I don't think the bans really hurt it as much as we thought that it might. Maybe that data will prove differently, but from what I've seen, Timna Krom still slaps.
Well, actually, let's talk about Krom then. So Krom is actually the fourth most represented commander in the past week.
Okay.
Now, this is also still technically like a week late then, I guess, because of when we're recording this. But I don't think that we change week to week the same way that Modern does.
Yeah. Can you adjust the time length that it looks at? Can you look at the last 3 months?
I can go back to the last 2 weeks, because I don't want to go into 2024 because we're talking about the best decks of 2025. Right.
Yeah. Okay. So maybe go 2 weeks just to make it a little bit more data.
It's currently Friday, January 10th.
So we'll be like 2 days into December, but how many tournaments were in the last of December? It's fine.
Well, I shouldn't have said anything because by the time the video comes out, it'll be three weeks.
They don't know when we're recording.
Fuck. All right, so looking out 2 weeks then.
Timna is most popular still?
Timna is still the most popular. This actually bumps Krom's position up, to the number three spot. So Timna is coming in at about 10.72% of the meta. So
just
we can
about
round
11%.
That to about, 11%.
That's the number that comes after 10.
I
know that.
I was going to say 10.7, we can round that too, but I like your idea way better. Even number.
It was 10.72, and you were going to, is that what it was?
Yeah, 10.72. I'm going to round it to 10. Well, yeah, it's play to win. Are we not going to have a decimal in our numbers?
Yeah, let's round it to, I like that better. Let's round it to 10.7.
Right, so it's 10.7% of the meta. Timna is when Krom is about 5.16, rounding to 5.2% of the meta.
Which is kind of substantial. It's double, right?
It is double, and yeah. Guess,
does that mean that, where's Thrasios here?
Thrasios is in between them 7.45, which rounds up to 7.5%.
Got it, perfect. Okay, yeah, so this is kind of what I would have figured as well.
Yeah, and when I click on Krom, it's all Timna decks.
It's all Timna.
Which leads me to believe that it's about 5% of the Timna decks that are Timna Thrasios, and that means that about the other 5% are going to be the Timna Krom decks then.
Yes, I think that's right, because since Thrasios is 7%, Thrasios, 5 of that is probably with the Timna Thrasios, and 2 of it's probably with Rograk or something?
With Rograk,
is that how math works?
Okay, a couple of outliers, because there will be a couple of Timna Jeskas
that get
thrown in here too. So it might be a little bit less than 5%.
Sure.
But I think that makes sense, considering that our fourth most represented commander...
Can I guess?
Yes.
Okay, I'm going to... Kinnan? No, it's going to be Magda. I don't know. It's neither.
Dude, no. I was leading up to it perfectly. Because we were going to talk about Rograk. We were going to talk about Rograk. Yeah.
It is another partner. I don't know why. I feel like Rograk has dropped in popularity a little bit, but I guess it hasn't.
Well, I think Rograk Silas has.
Yeah.
But Rograk Thrasios is still doing pretty well. So Rograk is coming in at 4.9%, just shy of hitting 5, which means that there is a decent amount of Rograk Thrasios that's out there making up like a pretty decent split between... the small guy being a partner for Thrasios and Timna being a partner for Thrasios.
I like calling Rograk the small guy.
I don't want to keep saying Rograk so often.
No, that's good.
Yeah.
Timna, Thrasios, Krom, Rograk are the four most popular commanders.
Yeah.
Partners are good.
Partners are
they
really
remain
good.
Yeah. They are particularly good now. Is it more partners after this?
There are a couple more partners that are after this. Skipping a stage, we'll see Silas coming in at 3.1%.
Oh, interesting.
You know, now that I'm looking at this, makes me think there might be more Rog Silas than there is Rog Thras.
You said we're skipping a step? Was there one between?
There is. Yeah, I do want to get to that later because I'm a little bit... I kind of want to figure this out about the Rog Thras and the Rog Silas split. Yeah.
Are these just total decks or are these decks that have converted?
I think this is just total decks.
This is just total play decks.
This is total decks. Yeah, because I have the number of decks that are here that have shown up in the past 2 weeks.
Okay.
And the time span too. And there's no way that 131 Timna decks converted in the 2 weeks.
Certainly not. No. Okay. I just want to make sure that like these aren't decks that necessarily did well in the tournament. These are just the decks that you're more likely to see in the tournament.
The metagame.
Yeah,
the metagame. Yeah, okay. So if Silas is only being paired with Rograk and has a 3.1% share of the meta, and Rograk has a 4.9% share of the meta, that means that there's really only like 1.8% of the meta that's Thrasios Rograk specifically then.
That sounds right.
Yeah, which means that I think there is more Timna Thrasios being shown up than any other partner pairing.
That sounds accurate. Timna Thrasios feels so powerful right now. Every time I play that deck, it feels, I don't want to say like easy, but the deck just has so many good cards. It makes sense why it's so high up on these lists.
It's like right there neck and neck with Krom, I will say. Right there neck and neck. But Krom has only had 63 appearances, whereas Thrasios has had a total of 91 in this time period.
Okay, that's a bit more.
Which is pretty substantial, yeah. All right, so I want to get back to that space that's in between.
Because
Silas is number 6, but our number 5 commander, What you got on your mind for this one?
I still think it's Kinnon or Magda.
It is Kinnon. Kinnon, yeah. 44 decks, 3.6% of the meta right there. This is actually not surprising.
I think Kinnon has got a couple of new things recently that make it quite good. The Enduring
Vitality.
Vitality.
That what card, a cool card for
it. It just feels like kind of perfect for Kinnon. Other cards similar to it have existed before, but this one just works so well with exactly what Kinnon wants. Makes it like kind of impossible to kill. Killing it is kind of irrelevant. It's just going to come back right away, so you have to use two removal spells on it. Who's got two removal spells?
You know, that card's being seen in Rog Thrasios,
makes
too.
Perfect yeah. sense there, too.
Because they're playing that Song of Totentaz that makes yeah, all those rats.
Yeah.
Right? You're already playing a Earthcraft deck. So, like, yep. if you're already trying to find ways to tap your creatures and, like, go off with Kinnon or Earthcraft with your Rograk, just, like, having a free creature in order yep. to, like, make mana like this, it fits really nicely into those decks, too.
Yeah, I completely agree. It makes total sense to see Kinnon here. I think Kinnon has gotten a lot better since the bans, although it was still around here post-bans, but I don't know. I like its position a lot more, especially with a pilot that really knows how to play the deck.
They might not have topped the most tournaments, yeah. but because they're seeing the most play, these are the tier one decks
these
that
are
you're
going
to run into.
These are the decks that you can expect to play at a tournament, no matter what you're going to play. Do we know, should we finish out like a top 10? Is there like a 10 here of the other like three decks that we'll see?
I'd love most? To keep going, yeah. Because Sisse's on the list.
Sisse's still here.
At like 2.2% of the meta here, too. 27 appearances.
Even without Dockside, which is, I think, fine. It being bumped down to like a tier 2-ish. But although, is that even true? I feel like are all the top 10... Can we assume all of these top 10s are tier 1 decks, or how many tier 1 decks can we have?
I would say the top 5 would be tier 1. I think we're going to start to enter the tier 1.5 category here. Because yeah. as I take a look, I'm seeing... Actually, a decent amount of pretty good performances here. There's a top 4 here. There's a second place showing. Here's a first place showing.
Oh, with Sisse.
Yeah, with Sisse. Now, these might not be, like, huge tournaments. It's very early into January. We have not had huge tournaments. A lot of these are, like, capping at 50 people events, but...
This is just a first look.
You're still winning games in events that are for store credit or money in some yeah. kind of a way.
I mean, Sisse is still great because you have access to... Basically, this like zero card or one card combo, if you need it to be, if you have enough mana, the inevitability is great. You lose the explosiveness without Dockside, but competent pilots can just make sure that they play to their outs and pilot the deck really well. You can definitely still do well with this deck.
Did you ever play Cryptolith right in your Sisse list?
No, I haven't. Are they playing it now?
At least this one is here.
And they're also playing the Enduring card?
Enduring Vitality. They are on Enduring Vitality, yeah.
Yeah, so just tons of way to make as much mana as possible. Make sure all your creatures are tapping for mana. That makes sense to me.
Ruby Daring Tracker.
Oh, whoa. This is one that I've thought of too. Yeah, Legendary Mana Dork.
This is great.
Yeah.
When it attacks, while you control a creature with power 4 or greater, it gets +2/+2 until end of turn.
That part's a little bit less That's, relevant.
I was like, oh, it has another ability that works really well with Sisse. And I was like, oh, wait a minute.
Not quite. No, and it would be great if you could pump the Sisse with it or something.
Oh, and but then your 4 Sisse could go get you like your Nicol Bolas then when
yeah,
you need it.
Oh my God,
too?
That would be perfect. But no, yeah, just being a legendary mana dork for 2 pips, I think is fine.
Yeah, I think so too. I'm really happy to see Sisse like still doing really well. I think she still has a lot of really good tools, still being able to win at instant speed and all that jazz.
So Sisse's at 7. Who's 8? Or Sisse's at 7?
All right. Yeah, I guess we should line this up specifically. So I really can't decide what the number one is. It's between Timna Krom and Timna Thrasios.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I think we can just use this rating and keep it as per commander.
And just keep it by this and just say this would be Timna then.
Yeah.
Timna
since we're not
commander.
Exactly sure, we don't have to, you know.
Because it's close. Because like the next commander that's going to come up on the list is also going to get thrown into the Timna category then too.
Is it Jeska or is it Malcolm?
It's Malcolm, yeah.
Oh, okay, yeah.
That does throw into Timna's 10.7%. So not only is Krom fighting for space with Timna, but then it's also Thrasios.
Yes. I think for this tentative list, we're just looking at the most played commanders and the things that we should be looking out for the most going into tournaments in 2025. So I think it's fine to just include one at a time.
Well, then that makes it real easy then. Then that's definitely Timna's number one right now. Thrasios is 2. Krom is 3. Rograk is 4. Kinnon's 5. Sylas is 6. 7 is Sissé that we said, and then number 8, like we're saying now, is Malcolm.
Malcolm, the card draw plus mana in the command zone, I think is such a perfect combo.
But Malcolm also then has the flexibility to go with Vial Smasher too, so if you don't want to play the slow route, you can be a little bit more speedy and have better win conditions with Underworld Breach in your deck.
That's true.
If you play Vial Smasher.
Yes, the white version, playing with Tim and Malcolm, you get to play Delny, and it's like the best Delny deck.
Oh, it's such a good Delny deck. It's only seen 2% of the meta in this time period that we're at, but the first deck I'm looking at is a second place performance 3-2 win record at this event with Malcolm Breaches.
Oh,
I thought I was gonna click
with
on
not
that
Timna.
Yeah, I thought I was gonna click on that and it was gonna say Malcolm Kettis, because there's also a couple of Malcolm Kettises on here.
Does it show you the difference in percentage of how many are playing Malcolm with Timna versus Malcolm with Kettis versus Malcolm with Breaches?
I just get a list of the each deck. Yeah. And I'm also looking at a Malcolm Francisco in here, too.
Seems like basically any red option. Just pick your red option so you can do the Glenhorn combo.
Yeah, there's so many good things that you can do with Malcolm.
Yeah.
Or if you want to go, yeah. And that's what makes it the 8th best commander.
You're like, I don't know where to go with this anymore. Moving on. 9th one.
9th one. All right, 9th one. Yuriko, the tiger shadow.
Still here.
Still here. And honestly, like, this is one that I feel like a lot of people were saying was going to be really good post-ban because it didn't really get hit by the ban at all. And it's gotten a ton of new tools recently.
Yes.
A top 4 at our tournament back in December, which is, I guess, not part of the time period that we want to look at, but I am glad to see that it is still around.
I love to see that deck in tournament CDH games because I feel like it puts such a cool dynamic on the game that other decks can't do, of just like being able to actually attack and kill your opponents with damage quickly. Not really many other decks can do that, so yeah, Yuriko is great.
And that's at about 1.8% of the meta. And then followed by Magda. Our number 10 slot at 1.6% of the meta.
Interesting to see no Kenrith, no Najeela is interesting at all in this list. I imagine both of those, or at least Najeela, is like somewhere in the next 5 or 10.
Honestly, there's going to be a bunch of decks that will come in between Najeela and the rest of these that we're talking about here.
I wonder if it's just too difficult to like reliably connect with 1/1s right now, or are people just bored with Najeela, or if it's just a small sample size and for some reason people are off Najeela right now.
I don't know that deck thrives the slower the format gets, though, too. Yeah. Because like the bigger the boards get, you can't rely on your backup win condition of Najeela beats ever. You can't ever go for Najeela combos then, too, because you have to have a player to attack to make sure that stuff survives. So like you're kind of only relying on Thassa's Oracle Consultation and Ad Nauseam, which is also not in a great spot right now.
I guess that's true. Any of these, I mean, Rock'Sai is an Ad Nauseam deck, and Timna Krom is still technically an Ad Nauseam deck, like, sometimes, right?
But, like, has the ability to play into the late game way stronger than its ability to play early Ad Nauseam.
Are any of the commanders that we mentioned otherwise supporting an Ad Nauseam strategy?
Maybe if you built your Francisco Malcolm deck a specific way.
Sure.
But I would never want to play Final Parting and Ad Nauseam in the same deck. I think you're doing too many different things there.
Kind of interesting that Ad Nauseam has kind of seen such a drop in popularity, it seems.
It's bad against the slow format. Like, what you want to do when you want to go fast. Every time we talk about the format being fast and I need a card image to put on the screen, I always put Ad Nauseam on the screen. Yeah. Like, it's always the quintessential fast CEDH card for me, even over the fast mana that helps you get there, that I feel like with the format right now, as synonymous as Valley Floodcaller and slow mid-range grind stuff, I think that Ad Nauseam just really doesn't have a home.
Yeah, which is kind of strange because 4 months ago when the bans happened, I thought, and I think for a brief period when people were figuring out what they were doing, Ad Nauseam was going to be great. When no one knows exactly what's going on, it is. But once everyone figures out, if they just communicate a little bit in the turn zero and the turn one conversation, it does seem like it becomes very easy to stop the Ad Nauseam player.
I also did have a harder time knowing what hands to keep after the bans because I was it was so much reliance on a tutor for Mana Crypt, and like that's how I was winning games so often that like I really had to shift my mindset. And then once I kind of realized the kind of hands that you can still keep in the current meta, I would definitely made me go, okay, I don't have to be as afraid of these fast decks because I know that I can still grind through all this.
Do you think there's any truth that ad nauseum decks are a little bit tricky to play and maybe people are more confident in laying back on grinding engines like Thrasios and Timna instead because that's easier? Is there anything to that, or do you think playing both decks is equally hard and that doesn't actually affect it?
No, I think that makes a lot of sense.
Because for my brain, like Timna Thrasios feels very easy and Rock'Sai feels impossible. Difficult because if I make one mistake in Rock'Sai, whole thing is shot. If I make a mistake in Timna Thrasios, it feels like I can recover pretty easily, but maybe that's just me. I don't know.
You have the card advantage of the command zone. You have so much advantage you can build up that you just go, oh, I made a mistake, but there's so many other things I have that prevent me from stumbling. Whereas Rock'Sai is just like, I have these tools that I need, and if I don't have these tools, I can't win the game. Like, it's very particular and it's much more optimal in the sense that it's just trying to go for the most efficient quick win. So I do think there's a lot of merit in what you're saying. That
like, it's just harder to play ad nauseum, so people don't bring it.
Whereas Thrasios, you just have to go Hermit Druid and then one of three other cards, and you can just win the game.
Not Hermit Druid.
Well, you could.
You could.
But Devoted Druid is a better option.
Devoted Druid is the card that you're thinking of, I think. I don't know. I think that might be part of it. I wonder, in a dream world, if and when there's a CDH Pro Tour, I wonder if it would be more dominated by ad nauseum and turbo strategies and stuff like that. Because if a player knows the deck really well and will not mess up with the deck, Rock'Sai maybe gets a lot better.
Yeah, I could see that.
Maybe.
Well, the Pro Tour has always never been a good indicator for what the meta of a format actually is. Because pros are going in and they're trying to metagame against
pros.
Exactly.
Yeah,
not
you're right.
Just the metagame.
Yeah,
so yes and no.
Yes, and it wouldn't be relevant.
It wouldn't be relevant.
The
winning deck would see a ton of influx into the format, and then that's about it.
That's kind of interesting. Okay.
Yeah. There's a couple of honorable mentions I want to bring up just because
let's go over
some of these decks have partner pairings that means that we technically could have extra space in the top 10. So I think just highlighting some honorable mentions is cool.
That sounds great. Real quick before, can we just talk about how there are only three non-partner decks in the top 10 that are non-partners?
There's four.
Oh, Sissei. Sorry.
Sissei is the other one. Yeah, the surprise one.
I guess what's really four out of 10 isn't actually that few.
It's a pretty good showing, but it's not 50%.
Yeah.
So it's bad.
I agree. Okay. Honorable mentions.
Tivit is the first honorable mention I want to bring
still
up
here.
Still here. Actually has the exact same percentage metagame share as Magda.
Oh, okay.
But, dude, we might need to do some swapping. We might need to do some swapping, actually. I think I need to put Magda down.
And in which way do you mean?
Like, Magda should be an honorable mention. Tivit should be the number 10 deck.
Why is that? Does it have more wins?
Yeah, it's got two first places right here.
How many does Magda
have? All right, let's keep this in mind, though. One was a four-player game.
They're all four-player games, aren't they?
I know. The whole event was four players.
Oh. Yeah. Okay.
And then the other one was an eight-player event.
Okay, so maybe not. Okay.
So it's still an honorable mention.
It's still an honorable
mention. But it still has very good winning capability, though. It's
things I like about Tivit right now. There's no Dockside to give a hoot about. You can
exactly.
Put 20 tokens into play. It doesn't matter at all. It's going to be great. Other things I like is just inevitability. You're going to win the game. You have a 6/6 flyer. Now, if you can just stay alive long enough, you have decent inevitability. Another thing I like about it, nothing. I don't see very much. That's what I like about it because I don't think it's actually very good.
I think it's old news and that's why people aren't playing it right now. But I think if people moved off of decks like the Master of Keys.
Do we see any Master of Keys anywhere on your list? Do you see anything?
No, not even close. Yes. 9 appearances at less than 1%.
So some people are still playing it.
But it seems like the better Esper decks are Timna Malcolm.
Yeah, Timna Malcolm is above Tivit, which is kind of interesting. I wouldn't have guessed that.
Well, Malcolm is above Tivit.
Yeah,
I'd be interested.
That's true.
I would be interested in knowing what specifically Timna Malcolm would be like. Malcolm really only has like 0.6%. more metagame share than
Tivit. Okay. So Tivit's probably more popular than Malcolm Timna then, because there's all those red commanders you pair Malcolm with as well also.
Right. Malcolm itself is just more popular.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Fall in love with low prices. All in the Kroger app. Buy two, get three free on delicious 12 packs of Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up. Then find low prices on thousands of items like sparkling ice water, Kroger brand chips, and more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
That's interesting. So this isn't the perfect top 10 in terms of all of the decks that you'll see.
And none of these lists can ever be perfect because of just a thousand different reasons. It depends on so much. But I think this is still a good snapshot of what you can expect in the first few months of CDH tournaments in 2025 until a new set comes out and changes things or until something bans things.
And I would still confidently say these are the best commanders in CEDH right now, too.
Yeah, I think so. These are the ones that I lose to probably the most.
Yeah, exactly. I would say so, too. And these are the ones that I will not be surprised to see the most at tournaments, too. I think what we'll end up seeing more winning tournaments is just like some weird decks that pop up because that happens all of the time.
Where I know.
The unfamiliarity of what you're doing can be taken advantage of by you, the player, for knowing what you're doing.
You certainly get a huge brewer's advantage in CDH, I think. Much more so than other formats because people just may not know what you're doing. I think most top fours that I see, and this is just my own opinion, and you know, but I feel like I see a lot of a top four made up of three of these decks and then a deck that I had never heard of, you know, some sort of Sphinx deck or some sort of insane thing that is still playing a CDH deck or something, but 10 cards are weird and the commander you've never heard of. I think that can be, if you're a great pilot and you know the deck inside and out, an incredible way to spike a tournament. But I don't think it's a consistent way to win a ton of games of CDH because most of those decks, once you figure it out, they become easy to stop. Some have survived, like Magda was one of those decks and then became a tier one deck. But like Winota is an example of once people figure out how to play around it, it just became too easy to stop.
Yeah, so like between not just the metagame being favorable for a deck, but also like I feel like Tyam was in that spot too.
Yes.
Where Tyam, also another honorable mention deck I want to throw out there too. That's another deck that just has really weird win lines that can go off through interaction at instant speed that a lot of people just aren't as familiar with. So I think that's another one you can just steal wins from.
Is Tyam the next honorable mention, the 11, or is it just one of the next ones?
It's just one of the next ones because there's two that come in between them. Derevi Imperial Tactician comes in underneath Tivit here.
Oh, yeah, Derevi's doing a lot recently.
I agree. Yeah, there was actually just one less showing of Derevi than there was for Magda and Tivit in this very small time period that we're looking at.
That's so crazy to me because Derevi I would have not considered to be a tier 2-ish, which seems like where we're at right now, deck in a long time. But I think the inclusion of the One Ring plus the inclusion of some other lands and some combo lines that this deck has recently gotten access to have like made it really good.
Yeah, I mean, they're a little convoluted from what I can tell. Like you need Preston to make sure that your Derevi dies, and then you need Feyborough Elder to make sure that you can make mana, but you also need Mana Vault to make sure that you can start making infinite mana
right,
so that you can keep doing your whole thing at instant speed, and then you can start untapping the One Ring. So like there's a lot of pieces, but we've seen decks that need a lot of pieces do super well in CEDH, almost inexplicably.
Yes, yeah, I feel like, again, Magda keeps on coming up with that, but I feel like over time, Magda gained a couple more pieces to make the lines a little bit smoother. I think Derevi is going to have the same thing where if Derevi just gets a couple more things to make the lines a little bit smoother, I could certainly see Derevi becoming just as good as Magda or something like that. The ability to get it in play from the command zone for the same cost every time is actually really huge. You're not casting a spell, so it's kind of uncounterable. I think the untapping is insane with the One Ring. If you can pair that with some other shit, that gets like really good really fast.
Yeah. And then Talion the Kindly Lord is the next one that will come up here. This has the same metagame share as Tyam.
Okay.
And I think this is a pretty good spot to kind of cap off where we're at with tier two here.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. Tyam is another one that I expect to beat my ass, but it's a deck that I don't really want to touch.
Yeah, me too. Just because I'm the kind of guy that loses to Tyam because he doesn't know everything that Tyam does.
Yeah.
So my strategy is just remove the Tyam and make sure Tyam just can't do his thing because there's no Tyam in play.
Yeah, I'm talking more specifically about Talion. I don't want to play Talion. Tyam I'd be a little bit more interested in.
Oh, wait. You said you don't want to play Talion?
Talion.
Oh.
That's the one before Tyam?
You know what? I probably don't want to play Talion myself either.
I don't want to play Thassa's Oracle when my commander says, fuck you, you know? Like like my commander has the option to make my win condition be bad and kill me. Like, even if you can just play around it. I don't want to have to play around it. I want a commander that doesn't make me have to play around my own win condition.
Yeah.
So for that reason, I'm off Talion. But Talion, I don't know, it still puts up some results.
But no wins, though.
But
no wins in this first.
That's why people keep making you die.
Yeah, no wins this month, so.
People make you to force draw a card when you have your Thassa's Oracle in play. That's not a good place to be.
Yeah, exactly. That's a bad spot. So just because we just took a look at what I'm considering tier 1, tier 1.5, and tier 2, if your deck is not in these tiers that we are arbitrarily throwing up right now, that does not mean that you're not going to get wins.
These are just the decks that you'll see most often.
Exactly, yeah.
It doesn't really honestly say a ton about the best decks in the format. I still think that's really hard to tell. These decks are probably the ones that will win the most, but best deck is really tricky in Singleton, huh?
It's, well, yeah, that's true. I mean, I would wager that one of the tier one decks is the best deck because there's a reason why so many people are on these decks.
I agree. But knowing which one's which,
that's so hard for me to say. Yeah,
I agree.
I'm still going to think that it's Thrasios Timna just because I think that the win lines, they're just so clean to set up with Thrasios.
Yeah, I think Thrasios and Timna's lines are very efficient and they're very safe and it's really easy to grind forever. Some of Timna Kroms even, you have to Final Fortune and then someone casts Silence, protect the Silence against you and you go, oh, fucking A. You add a Lion's Eye Diamond, discard your hand, and most of the time you're good by the time you're doing that, but sometimes you're not and that sucks. Like, Timna Krom has some opportunities to for you to go for some risky things, which can pay off, but can bite you in the ass. Whereas to me, Timna Thrasios feels so safe.
Way safer, yeah. And honestly,
I can just wait. It's okay. I can just wait. It's fine.
I'm way higher on green right now than I am on red in general. So Esper add green is something that I'm way more interested in, especially because my green commander I get to pair with Timna allows me to play Fierce Guardianship way more free. I can play Mox Amber way more free. Like, there's so much more value to going Thrasios, I think, right now.
Yeah, that's kind of true. I mean, Kromna is great. It helps you draw more cards with Timna, but for that situation to work where you're drawing cards with Timna and Krom, that means you've spent 8 mana on your commanders to just draw some cards, which is wonderful when you're drawing cards and you don't have anything else better to do. But with Timna Thrasios, I've only spent 5 mana now, so you have to spend a whole 3 extra mana where before both my commanders are out, probably before your Timna is or at the same time that your Timna is. So Timna Thrasios feels a little bit, I don't want to say quicker, but just like establishes quicker.
It establishes way quicker because you want to be able to have untapped mana all the time for Thrasios activation.
Right,
so
like
you want to make sure that you build out Thrasios and mana. If we are comparing them 1v1 then too, like, yeah, your Krom can come in over me, but like my Thrasios is going to wall your Timna every time. So like you can't swing that at me and then I can swing at you with my Thrasios. It's something. I think that there's just enough eeks to get Thrasios above Krom here.
For me right now, I agree with you for sure. And Seabrook Muse is just crazy in a Valley Flood color world. If that's what you want to be doing and going at instant speed, Seedborn Muse makes that insane.
It's just the maximum amount that you can take advantage of mid-range hell right now, I think.
Are you playing Cavern of Souls in your list yet?
No. And you're on Cavern of Souls now? Is it just like uncounterable Grand Abolishers you're going for?
Or Seedborn Muse. Yeah, Grand Abolisher is the best one, obviously.
Oh, but I should consider it for Seedborn Muse quite a bit more.
Grand Abolisher is the best, or Cutsoul or something like that.
Yeah.
Is really
are there
nice.
Any other spirits in the deck besides Seedborn Muse that you are on? I mean, it being a colorless land after it gets an uncounterable Seedborn Muse out is like, who gives a fuck?
Yeah, which is kind of fine. I swapped it out for the Surveil land and the four color decks. I don't know why the Surveil has felt too not good to me.
Oh, yeah, I didn't even try to put one
in. You didn't
even
try?
Yeah,
okay.
No.
Spirits. No, but Bloom Tender and Devoted Druid are both druids.
That's pretty cool. I kind of like that.
Thrasios and Thassa's Oracle are wizards.
Yep, that's a classic one.
Eternal Witness and Ranger Captain are all humans also. No other spirits. Valid Floodcaller is a wizard too. So wizard and human is common. Spirit would be nice. Sometimes it sucks. You know, sometimes it sucks. But it's an untapped mana source, which I still think is a lot of the time just better than the Surveil land. Especially because I'm not really using my graveyard. If I was on a Breach line, it might be a little bit better. If I was a deck that I was looking to on the first few turns not do as much, it'd be a little bit better. But I feel like this deck, I want to establish like somewhere around 5 mana, at least by turn 2. So I don't want to be wasting a tap land early on. So I've been liking Cavern.
Yeah, I agree. I'm on 29 lands. Oh, I'm on Shifting Woodlands. Are you on Shifting Woodlands?
I'm on Shifting Woodlands, but I don't know that I'm playing 27 lands. But I don't know that Shifting is great in the deck, to be honest. Did I cut it? Hold on. Maybe I cut it. I think I am not playing Shifting Woodlands.
That it's amazing, but I still just like having the potential utility of what it can do, because I think its upside is still very high.
A lot of your combos are permanent, so that does make sense.
I think I'm playing too many mana sources.
I'm playing 27 lands where you're playing 29.
I feel like I could easily shave the 2 shock lands I'm playing and feel fine.
2 shock lands. Which are you playing? Breeding Pool and what else?
Hollowed Fountain.
I don't have a Hollowed Fountain and I don't have Shifting Woodlands. That's probably the two lands.
Those are probably the two lands that I'm off. I could probably get rid of Hollowed Fountain and make room for another card. I don't know. I feel like I kind of like Shifting Woodlands.
I think Shifting Woodlands is worth continuing trying. I feel kind of uneasy playing too many lands that don't produce several colors in a four-color deck. I'm already on Biseiju. I'm already on Odawara. I'm on Emergent Zone. I'm on Ancient Tomb. That already feels to me like a ton. Cavern of Souls, too. Do you know what I mean? I don't think I can afford like the fluff of the green land that I already forgot the name of it.
You're on Emergent Zone, did you say?
I'm on Emergent Zone. I'm on Crop Rotation, and I want to go at instant speed. The whole deck like kind of relies on, like, I want a Valley Flood Caller. I want a Born Upon the Wind. I want a Seedborn Muse. I want to be able to win at instant speed in a couple different ways.
I should probably think about that, because I'm not on Emergent Zone right now, because I'm on both Valley Flood Caller and Born Upon a Wind.
The Magical Christmas Land is, like, when you have so many, if someone tries to respond to the first, there's, like, an okay shot. You have the ability to, like, over top of it.
To go for the next one, then,
Crop Rotation over top of your Mana Drain on my Valley Flood Caller to find Emergent Zone and try to win on top of that.
I feel like I would definitely have room to,
especially
to do
since
some
you're
of that.
Also on Gaia's Cradle. Like, you have several options, and even, like, crop rotating for Cavern of Souls can be, like, perfect sometimes. They'll think, like, oh, he's going for Gaia's Cradle, it's fine, or whatever. And then you get Cavern named Human, and then they can't stop you anymore.
Yeah, like, there's some utility that my list would have.
Are you playing Cutsal?
I am on Cutsal.
Cutsal's so good.
Part of the reason why I wanted to build this deck again was because I wanted to play a Cutsal deck. Because I was just like, I want to play the most amount of good silences that I can.
Good silences.
Yeah,
that
I think
important.
Cutsal just like fits the bill as a good silence, because there's also a couple of ways that I'll be able to draw a card off of them.
I am playing Noble Hierarch. In the car the other day, I said I wasn't playing Noble Hierarch. I am. I looked at my list.
So am I. The Orcish Bowmaster Orc Army
is a 0 with +1/+1 counter. Yes, so that would trigger it.
And if I did anything with Valley Floodcaller, also gives something +1/+1.
I'm playing Ledger Shredder in my list. I don't know if you are, but that also helps with Cutsal.
No, I have Mockingbird. That doesn't help with it. I'm thinking about Valley Floodcaller stuff. Like between Valley Floodcaller, between Birds of Paradise, Mockingbird, Valley Floodcaller. Like I have a couple things that could get pumped if I do the right thing.
I kind of have been liking Ledger Shredder a lot recently, honestly. I think even though the discarding, I'm not really using my graveyard that much. The thing getting huge is like super relevant. Being able to like threaten blocks on Kroms, being able to get in for like 5-10 damage over the course of the game can be actually kind of huge. I think you need like one additional Rustic Mystic type effect, and I don't really love Ogma. I don't think that one's great if you have option to other things, although it does draw you, like, it just straight up draws you the cards rather than the looting. I think the size difference and it being a bird for Valley Floodcaller is actually like weirdly relevant.
It's not nothing.
It has felt good to me so far. We'll see.
Yeah, I'm actually not on a 2-mana creature card advantage engine.
None.
In my list.
I think it's kind of nice to have an option at 2-mana slot.
It probably is. I just feel like I'm never really happy with any of them.
Yeah.
Is the big
problem.
They're
all so close. I feel like between Fairy Mastermind, Ledger Shredder, Ogma.
Activist of Ogma.
And then what's the other one?
The Poliwag Prodigy.
The new one.
Like between these five, these are great Jeska Ishai cards that like I would slot into every single build of a deck like that. But like I've been having a harder time finding room for them in this deck when I've had so many more instants and sorceries and artifacts that I want to get in here instead.
Yeah, that's true. I think it's worth it though. Like you have to be able to like grind outside of like Rustic and Mystic, and you don't want to have to be mulliganing to those cards all the time.
What I don't like about them is that they're only good in conjunction with other card advantage engines that I have. So like I already have to have Rustic Study in play for any of them to be good. And if I have Rustic Study in play, I'm set. Like I don't need another thing. Like, okay, maybe Ledger Shredder is the best because Ledger Shredder is really good with your Timna card advantage engine too. So I think that kind of helps makes up for it. But I think a lot of these other ones, like I can't really justify because there's going to be games where they underperform for me. And I would rather have cards in my deck that are always good.
It's kind of interesting because the power of CDH, the floor of CDH has gotten so high recently that I feel like it changes a lot of the dynamics on what we thought were staples from a while ago. I think we used to think certain cards were so good because the difference between them and other cards was so great, you must play them. But I don't know that that's always the case. Like, this is kind of a jumping off, but we were talking about a patron-submitted deck recently, Zula Duck, Eldrazi CDH deck, but they're not playing things like Lotus Petal because they're playing Chalice of the Void. And I actually don't think that's as crazy as it once was. I think if you're playing for a game that you want to attack the meta in a different way, I think playing as few nombos as possible is actually good. Like, 5 years ago, Lotus Petal was so much better than anything else because getting out the cards that were good ahead of the other ones was a huge difference. But now that we've gotten so many more powerful CDH cards, the gap is like a little bit less. Does that make sense? So that like Lotus Petal is still really good, but it's not so much better than anything else that you must play it all the time. Lotus Petal is not the best example because you didn't always play Lotus Petal. But cards like that, I think in 2025, I want to revisit a lot of cards and say, are these actually staples? Yeah. Since the power level has changed, are these still, is this fast mana? Are these tutors? Are these free interactions? A lot of them will be, but I think some of them will not be quite as staple-y as they once were.
Because of how slow the format is, I think that there's going to be a lot more flexibility to be able to build around your commander a little bit more like that too.
There's a little more room maybe.
Yeah, there's not a need for those cards anymore because of where the metagame's at. And I think that just including cards in your deck because we're used to and that they're just very powerful and we like them doesn't necessarily make your deck optimal in the current metagame anymore.
I 100% agree. Something that I have picked up a lot of from getting a little bit more back into 60-card formats recently is that most 60-card decks have no nombos with itself. Everything works with everything. It's all geared towards itself because the power level of these formats is normally a little bit spread out. So as long as your deck focuses on its own thing, it can play, besides the mana bases and some of the removal spells, a pretty unique set of cards just for it. I think we're going to approach that place in CDH soon where slight deck building restrictions are actually going to be optimal because all of your cards work well together and you never have a dead draw. Like there's some, if you're playing the Chalice of the Void deck and you want to be naming it on zero and you rip a Lotus Petal or a Mox Diamond or a Chromox off the top, you can't afford to skip a whole turn by doing that. It's so devastating. So like, yes, the payoff of being able to get something out early can be good, but if you're trying to slow the game down and you don't want to top deck something like that in the late game, I don't know, it makes sense, I think.
It's very interesting what the slower meta is going to allow players to kind of get away with. Whereas like before in the original Flash meta, you didn't really have that. Like you had to be able to compete with Flash. And if you couldn't compete with Flash, if you couldn't beat them, you were joining them. There was no room for much outside of that. Whereas like now we're playing these long games that still kind of feel like the Flash meta. Like we're still
interesting that you brought Flash up. Yeah.
Yeah. Like we're still always like on guard because people can win at any time. But because people can win at any time at a bit of a slower pace, thanks to there not being as explosive starts with Dockside and Mana Crypt and Jeweled Lotus, now like you can build up to these larger than life boards that you really couldn't do before.
It is very similar to the Flash meta, except Valley Floodcaller can flash anything into play, not non-creature specifically, but
not just your win condition. Not,
Flash could only put in Hulk. That was your line. If you're playing Flash, you're hulking. You're putting Hulk in. But Valley Floodcaller can win in a number of ways. You can Underworld Breach in someone's end step. You can Dual Caster Mage in someone's upkeep. You can win however
that's
you want
true.
With Valley Floodcaller.
You know what? So that like, makes it even crazier because like before you could just go, oh, I'm gonna win on top of your Flash
with a Hulk, with a different Hulk line.
And they would go, oh, I can't do anything about that. But now they can go, I still have Flash and a second win condition in my hand, so let me re-win on top of you.
Which I think that's actually opens up for like an interesting metagame. Right now, we're in the thick of it of like everyone's trying to figure out what the best Rhystic Study deck is. But I think over the course of the next few months, I think we're going to find out that a lot of decks will survive if they can just figure out how to grind into the mid-game and use Valley Floodcaller. And really
it,
well.
It doesn't necessarily, I was going to say, it doesn't necessarily have to be Rhystic Study that you rely on, but like Valley Floodcaller is like, I feel like the draw to the format right now and the draw to like this instant speed stuff. So I kind of feel like, that's still, you're going to play Rhystic Study in those decks.
I wonder if cards like Yeva, all green creatures get Flash or something. I wonder if either as a commander or in those mono green decks will become more popular.
She's seen CEDH tournament victories before.
In the past, yeah.
Which I do think part of it is because of unfamiliarity, but the combination of unfamiliarity and Flash works very well. But I do feel like Yeva, and especially Green in general, now that we've gotten extra tools like Legolas's Quick Reflexes.
Oh, good one.
Yes, like there's been a lot of extra stuff feeding more into Green as opposed to some of the other colors that got tools more in 2022, 2023.
Yeah, Mono Green especially is one that I think could benefit from. And I don't know what the fuck I'm talking about. Keep that in mind with a grain of salt. But I wonder if a mono green list could cut things like the Chromoxes and the Mox Diamonds and lean heavy into the Chalice of the Voids and the Collector Oofs and go that route. I wonder if something like that could be possible when the rest of your green cards are good and you can support not having to mulligan for the fast mana and instead just playing good cards on turn one or two. I don't know. I'm rethinking. I'm rethinking everything I know about CDH.
I mean,
taking
a look at the largest tournament that I can find data on for 2025 so far is a 54-player event. And the second place list is a Marwyn the Nurturer deck. So, like, you're talking about this shit, and I don't think you're that far off. There's
take a look at their list.
Very few artifacts. There's Sol Ring, there's Lotus Petal, and there's no Chrome Mox.
No Chrome Mox.
No Chrome Mox.
Okay. Any Mox Diamonds?
No Mox Diamond.
Okay.
No.
Right? So that we're may be budgetary, yeah. But that may be purposeful choice, and I don't know that it's insane.
The only other artifacts that they're on, the One Ring, Staff of Domination, Walking Ballista, and there is a Collector Oof here.
Okay.
So, like, you would need to get rid of your Collector Oof in order to go off with some of your lines. However,
you can function without for a while, it seems. Maybe.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe that's the thought.
You can. Yeah, you really should be able to.
Especially with Morrowind, like, she gets enormous. You can attack a lot of the time. The elf ball strategy can just be make bunch of mana, make elves big and
she
attack.
She's huge. Like, so much of this deck is making her bigger.
I think that's mainly to make mana, but at some point you could probably attack with it.
Like, Embiggen and Might of Old Carossa. Berserk.
Nice.
Fucking sick. Make a fuck ton of mana. Jesus. But yeah, I know you don't know what you're talking about, but I think you're going somewhere with that.
I don't know. It's my theory, so I think it has some truth.
All right, so I think we did a good job of figuring out what the CEDH metagame is looking like. I feel a lot better when it comes to where I think things are at. So thanks for sitting here and listening to me figure
you're
this
welcome.
Out. For those listening, we just shook hands.
Thank you so much for watching or listening. If you'd like to support us directly, you can do so on Patreon, like our $100 patrons.
Jude Knowles, Spangler, Demetrius Clark, Larceny Roars, Your Boy Blue, Sparky B, Insomnia, SC Phillip, Olden Groupie, Gecko 21, Caleb Ritchie, Zach Hartley, Reactive, Sean of the Ice, Luke Cook, Demon of Rosgrees, Peter Stewart, Cornar Wild, Uncle Butts, Nick Foles, Go to 9, Kwaje, Hamid, Lauren Connell, Scott Hawk, and Baby Jeebus.
If you want to pick up any of our merch, you can do it at playtowinmtg.com.
Thank you, Dragon Shield, for supporting the show. Use code PlayToWin5 at our affiliate link down below for 5% off.
Follow us on social media for more content.
Thank you for watching.
See you next time.
Sarcastic, Roy Turner, Mystic Muffin Man, Zachary Coulson, Jabaha, Mace the Ace, Dalton Poteet, Hobo Ghost, Justin, Man Solo, Jacob Depion, Wild Thing, Thomas Bueno, and David Nelson. Boom. Faced.
Face.
Face.
Wasn't that a thing?
Yeah, you got faced and
boom,
you just like
face.
Put, yeah,
like
you
when
just
you
put
like
your hand in their
when
face.
Like, when you would roast someone, like
yeah,
something like a yo mama joke, face.
What was it when you just put someone's hand in their face for like ever and then like just aggressively kept it there?
Stiff arm in football?
I want to stiff arm people in conversation more.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to leave up holiday decorations year round. Others have the need to use their garage as practice space for their new metal band. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.